Welcome to Atlanta, first of all. This has been my home for the past 4.5 years. It did snow here last week, which you probably don't feel that. Bad for us if you came from somewhere else, but it was quite exciting trying to drive home last Friday in the snow in Atlanta. So I do have some disclosures I want to tell you about. We're doing a clinical trial right now with Merck, and we're also involved in some of the HPV diagnostics that were referred to, the clinical trials going on with that, with GenProbe, GS, and Roche. And also, I've been the liaison a couple of times to the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, and so a fair number of these slides are stolen directly from that meeting, and they may be repeated at some later sessions today. But I'm gonna update you on vaccination, as you heard, and there have been some recent changes, which were referred to by Heidi at the end of the last talk, just in the past few months. And so I'm going to review what the old recommendations, the 2006 recommendations were, and tell you how we did as far as vaccine uptake, and then go on to the 2009-2010 situation. And then I just want to have a few slides about the finer points. This isn't going to be a whole hour worth of just vaccination, but there are a few little data points I want to make you aware of as far as information that may especially help you when you're out doing your job and talking to other people about this particular STD vaccine. So the original FDA approval along with the ACIP recommendation was in June of 2006, and then I think at Emory we were probably giving our first doses of vaccine early in 2007, so January of 2007, so 3 years of experience basically of that. The original quadrivalent HPV vaccine, which is, you heard of 6, 11, 16, and 18, was part of this adolescent platform, and maybe I should have made a disclaimer about that too, because I have an adolescent who's going through this platform right now, but she is, and all teenagers, early teenagers, tweens, get vaccinated at age 12 and 11 for a variety of things, which I have on the next slide, but they do go through a little pincushion phase similar to their earlier years in the pediatrician's office. There's been a publication from the CDC recently about vaccine uptake in this age group, and so, as I said somewhat less seriously, there are a series of recommended vaccines for 11 and 12-year-olds as part of an adolescent platform. Tdap is the pertussis booster that they're supposed to get. It's a single dose. The MCV4 is Menactra. It's meningococcal vaccine that's supposed to be given at that age as well. And then those, both of those are single dose vaccines. And then the quadrivalent vaccine is the one I'm showing data for up here. And this is one or more shots being given. And so the red bars are 2007. The yellow bars are 2008. And so a lot of times I've shown this data with just the HPV part and it doesn't look too good. You know, it looks like we could be doing a lot better as far as vaccine uptake, especially when you compare us to Australia or Canada or some of the other countries, English-speaking countries that approved this vaccine basically at the same time we did. On the other hand, if you look at two other vaccines that I think are both from 2005, if I remember correctly, for Tdap and Menactra, as far as giving them as part of the adolescent platform, I think these look vaguely similar, I think would be my non-statistical viewpoint of this data. So we're doing comparable compared to other adolescent vaccines, but like a lot of adolescent and adult vaccinations, we probably have a long way to go in giving this vaccine. And then this was a map that was shown at the ACIP meeting just a few weeks ago, and this is coverage by state, and that's also in that MMWR data as well. And so if you remember Heidi's map of cervical cancer incidence, this is there's an inverse relationship here, and I'm not sure exactly why. For example, the state of Georgia, which I believe is the 10th highest state for cervical cancer rates, our rate of vaccination is 18%. And you may have also noticed that South Carolina had one of the higher rates, and likewise they are under 20% as well. So unfortunately, there seems to be a disconnect here. And so I know a lot of you people are interested in policy and do a lot of that for your living. And so certainly this is probably a take home message. Again, state by state, locale by locale, we could certainly be doing a lot better. So I think Wisconsin is one of the very lowest ones, and as you can see, they have one of the highest HPV rates of vaccination. There's been a lot of presentations about barriers to HPV, and there's a whole body of literature on this. Certainly you can access dozens of publications a year, but one of the most intriguing ones that I saw was at the ACIP meeting in October of 2008, and this was a survey of pediatricians and family doctors in Colorado that was done by a pediatrician from the University of Colorado. Plus, at those same practices, they asked the parents, and so they had the parents who were bringing the adolescents in. So they had, you know, the doctors and their patients both from the very same sample. So, and what they found in these 850 pediatricians and family doctors in these offices were that the providers, their universal comment was it's too expensive. The Manactra, the Tdap, and the HPV, the quadrivalent HPV vaccines are some of the most expensive vaccines that we have. The comments from patients, or parents, I guess, more aptly, are a little more varied, but probably what you'd predict. The vaccine was too new. This was after the vaccine had been available for about 2 years, that adolescent age groups were too young, and that they were not sexually active yet, so why are we worried about this vaccine? So just at the last ACIP, or the last meeting of 2009, there were some updated recommendations as far as HPV vaccination. And so the bivalent vaccine, the one that has HPV in 16 in it, was approved by the FDA and was incorporated into the new adolescent platform that was published in the NMWR at the beginning of January. There was quite a bit of data that Joel's going to talk about presented at this meeting and the last ACIP meeting about male disease, anal intraepithelial neoplasia, and anal cancer, and I'll let him talk about that during the next session. The FDA also approved the quadrivalent vaccine for men based on its use to prevent genital warts in this population. And I'm not really going to talk about this too much, but there has been efficacy data presented at the ACIP and also in publications about women who are 26 and older, and that's been debated, as you know, in the media as well. This was the comparison table that was presented at the ACIP as far as the two different versions of the vaccine. So the middle column there is the quadrivalent vaccine, and the right-hand column is the bivalent vaccine. And so you could see as far as the targeted disease of cervical dysplasia due to the vaccine types, as you heard in the introduction, you get a very high rate of efficacy, higher than most of those other adolescent vaccines that I mentioned. So excellent protection against the targeted diseases of cervical dysplasia. Of course, the bivalent vaccine doesn't target genital warts, so only the quadrivalent vaccine would be expected to prevent that problem. There is additional data about the quadrivalent vaccine protecting against vulvar cancers, vulvar dysplasias, and vaginal cancers. Those are mostly due to HPV-16, so you'd expect someday there might be data about the bivalent vaccine, but currently unknown at this point. So, but it might follow, that data might be coming along. As far as duration of protection, I always stumble on this whenever I give one of these talks, and basically what's happened is every time there's a new study published, the duration of protection gets longer, is what it boils down to. So every time a cohort gets another year or two older and somebody has an abstract, it's another couple of years. And so I think we're up to about 8 years for the original monovalent version of this vaccine, and then up to 6 or 7 years for the commercially available bivalent version of this vaccine. But as long as you can follow a cohort, there's data that there's protection, is what it boils down. If some of you have tried to do 6, 8, 10 year studies, you know how difficult those studies can be. But the data that we do have is very reassuring as far as duration and protection. So here are the new recommendations. You can see that the font is quite a bit smaller here, so I'm not going to read this to you. You'll be glad to know. But the ACIP still recommends that routine vaccination of females in that 11 and 12-year-old age range with three doses, and you can begin as young as 9 because the safety data does go down that low. Then there's this catch-up cohort. Again, that's since I'm a gynecologist, this is a more typical age range for my patients to give that. And again, ideally, the vaccine should be given before women are sexually active, women and teenagers. The bivalent vaccine is also recommended as part of this same age range, the 9 to 26-year-olds. And the quadrivalent vaccine, as you can see in the last bullet point, has additional data about prevention of genital warts. Then here's what it was added about males, and as you can see, the quadrivalent vaccine is what's FDA approved in the United States for administration to males, and the recommendations are for 9 to 26, so the same age range, and again, should be given before exposure to HPV through sexual contact. So I've got three slides I want to show you about herd immunity. And this is not HPV or not sexually transmitted or anything, but this does, you know, near and dear to my heart being an obstetrician, because I think that you could have made an argument, a very convincing argument a generation or two ago, that the most important thing about giving a rubella vaccination is to prevent congenital rubella. And when I was a medical student and young resident, we were seeing all the women who had been born in the 60s and 70s with heart disease, having babies and keeping me up all night and having being in the ICU and that type of thing. So I, even though I was a little after this era, I certainly developed an interest in this. Two countries, Britain and Sweden, both made a very concerted effort to vaccinate 12-year-old girls and to vaccinate women postpartum who were seronegative. And some of you are probably aware of some of the excellent data tracking systems they have in these countries, especially Sweden, to track these cases. I don't have a pointer, but I think you can see that yellow line are the number of cases of rubella in Sweden. It follows that typical pattern, and where that first yellow arrow is when they implemented this idea of vaccinating 12-year-old girls and postpartum women. And as you can see, the pattern pretty much continued for another decade until 1982, when they started vaccinating 12-year-old boys. And then quite quickly, they got down to very few cases of rubella and essentially zero cases of congenital rubella 15 or 20 years before we were able to achieve that endpoint in the United States. So there was a natural experiment going on with single gender vaccination data from both those countries as far as case reporting with rubella and trying to vaccinate women for rubella. So the example, you know, I'm not an epidemiologist, but my way of looking at this is pregnant women benefited because the 12-year-old boys were getting vaccinated. And here is some data that talks about indirect benefits to men when women get the HPV vaccine. Again, there are lots of lines up there, and unfortunately, I don't have a pointer, but the solid line is, this is data from Australia, and I believe this is Melbourne in Australia, a single STD clinic. As you can see with that solid line, which is near the top of that graph, is women over 28, and a very sharp decrease in the number of cases of genital warts they're treating in that clinic after the national initiation of their vaccine program, which had a very high uptake. And then the other line I want to point out with you is the MSW, men who have sex with women, which is the dotted line. And as you can see, that there's a fall off there too. And as they analyze it in their statistics, that's a statistically significant difference as well. The solid line toward the bottom is herpes, so that's a control group, so that very bottom line. So of course you wouldn't expect it to have any effect on that. And so there's a nice statistical analysis in this paper that was published just a few months ago. So certainly if you're interested in this, go back and pull it. But basically, vaccinating women with the quadrivalent HPV vaccine in Australia and getting a very high level of compliance with that vaccine benefited the men and decreased the rates of genital warts in both populations, both heterosexual populations. Joel and I were just a few weeks ago at Eurogen, which is a European meeting with a special interest in HPV infections, abnormal pap smears, anal disease, et cetera. And this is one of the abstracts from this meeting. And I actually just made up this slide this morning, so you will have to look for the publication coming up. But I was in the audience. I thought this was very interesting, both from a study design and findings. So basically, what they were doing in Canada was going and finding new couple ships, I guess, for lack of a better term. So in 4 years, they found 322 college-age couples who had just started their relationship within a sexual relationship within a few months. And so as they were doing this study in Canada, they started giving the quadrivalent HPV vaccine. And so 9% of their cohort reported HPV vaccination. And so they found the prevalence of HPV vaccine type, just the prevalence of infection, as 7% in the couples with a vaccinated female and then 22% in the unvaccinated group. This was before the vaccine was being given to men in Canada. And so they did a multivariate analysis looking at all the different factors. And as you can see, the men benefited from their partners being vaccinated by a little more than 60%. This wasn't quite statistically significant, but I assume there's going to be more data coming as they accumulate more couples in this. But I thought this was interesting. Again, the male was getting a benefit of having a decreased rate of HPV infection based on the female's vaccination status in this heterosexual study. And so Dr. Franco is the one of the people that is in this study, and Dr. Burchell as well. This was something that an Emory medical student sent me, which I just thought was really amazingly cool. So this website, Information is Beautiful, is I would not look at this on company time. It's really interesting, and you can really get lost, and it's not at all about health or anything else, but it's graphic representation of data is what would be my take on it. The guy's an artist that does this. He's British. And for this, I didn't want a copy from his website. Again, it would be fun to just go look at it. But he has different size balls representing the likelihood of these events. And so this is data from the U.S. And he looked at, you know, the number of deaths from lightning strikes, chain wrecks, HPV-4, the quadrivalent HPV injection. If you assume that all 20 deaths were causally related, which is the opposite of the conclusion that the CDC reached based on their analysis of data. So it's 1 in 79,000 for lightning strikes, 1 in 115,000 for train wrecks, 1 in 145,000, again, assuming they're causally related. Deaths from cervical cancer is 1 in 500, so when you go to the website, you know that ball's about that big and the other balls are about that big, so it puts things into perspective. And then death from automobile accident is 1 in 260. If you get in a car while you're here in Atlanta, your rate will go up, I will guarantee you. So you personally will be affected by that statistic during your stay here, so please be careful in our fair city. So here are my conclusions. There are new recommendations about the HPV vaccination, and I went through those based on the data that was presented and the 2010 vaccination schedule. So HPV vaccination is highly effective against the targeted diseases, whether you want to talk about vulvar dysplasia, cervical dysplasia, genital warts, or whatever disease you would like to study. There's recent data that shows efficacy in men, which leads to Joel's talk, and recommendations have been made to include this group in vaccination efforts.